fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Got that Friday feeling. Hope you have it too. Welcome to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. 888-914-9149. That's the number to call to talk to me for free. Sponsored by the Catholic Order of Foresters Life Insurance. 888-914-9149. Email me. Send me a show idea. One of you did exactly that. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. The email address is Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. Yeah, become a shadow producer. Send me a link. Something you think might be a good topic of conversation. You can also follow the conversation with me on the X app. At Cale Clark is my handle, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. So much to get into today. We've got the week that was, being Friday, of course. I don't know what your weekend plans are, but I hope that you will carve out some time to be bored. We're going to talk about why being bored is actually good for you, and it's something that our society has tragically lost. And I want to start off with this, though. This is an incredible little piece, and many of you have read this. Incredible, probably for all the wrong reasons. And Kathia, who listens to the show, emailed me. She became a shadow producer. She sent me a link to this. It's a pretty viral article on the Associated Press about the Catholic Church, the state of the church. It's kind of lamenting how, quote-unquote, conservatives and quote-unquote traditionalists are taking over the church. And that's supposed to be a bad thing? 888-914-9149. I don't know if you read this article or not, but I want to thank Kathia for sending this to me. And it's titled, A Step Back in Time, America's Catholic Church Sees an Immense Shift Toward the Old Ways. Well, sometimes the old ways are best, right? Tim Sullivan wrote this for the Associated Press, and some have even suggested that, you know, honestly, when they first saw this piece, it almost sounded like something out of the Babylon Bee. I can't believe this guy's really writing this. He starts off by talking about a particular parish in Madison, Wisconsin, called St. Maria Goretti. And who knows, maybe you're listening today and maybe you're a parishioner at that parish in Wisconsin. And I just want to quote Tim Sullivan here. He starts off the article this way, quote, "It was the music that changed first." Or maybe that's just when many people at the pale brick Catholic church in the quiet Wisconsin neighborhood finally began to realize what was happening. The choir director, a fixture at St. Maria Goretti for nearly 40 years, was suddenly gone. Contemporary hymns were replaced by music rooted in medieval Europe. End of quote. Wow. Anytime you mention the word medieval, this is automatically assumed to be a very, very bad thing. Medieval times get a bad rap, I think, though. Oh, by the way, when I say medieval times gets a bad rap, I'm not talking about that dinner theater experience, of course, with the jousting and, you know, mead and all that stuff. I'm talking about actual medieval times, the actual medieval time period. It's not all bad. It's not all bad. A friend of the program, Dr. Peter Kraft, he used to say that that's where the great synthesis happened between the Judeo faith tradition and the Gentile pagan philosophy, if you will. Those philosophical categories gave the church a lot to help, you know, us to kind of explain things better theologically. They all kind of came together in this magical medieval period. It's like Reese's peanut butter cups. Hey, you got your philosophy into my faith, and it actually tastes pretty good. It's not bad. Not that everything in the medieval period was great, but at any rate, medieval Europe gets a bad rap sometimes. So Tim Sullivan continues on to talk about the tragic horrors that were happening at St. Maria Goretti Parish. He says, quote, "So much was changing. Sermons were focusing more on sin and confession. Priests were rarely seen without cassocks. Altar girls, for a time, were banned. At the parish elementary school, students began hearing about abortion and hell," end of quote. Okay, well, I suppose you could sort of maybe ask the question, what is the appropriate age to begin talking about issues as serious as abortion with children? That's kind of a question I'm dealing with as a dad right now. But this is seen, generally speaking, by Tim Sullivan as a very, very bad thing. He interviewed a former parishioner who said, quote, "It was like a step back in time." This parishioner was so afraid to put his or her name out there. Oh, it was a guy. He only spoke on condition of anonymity, an anonymous source at St. Maria Goretti Parish. Okay. But this article betrays, I think, a major, major misunderstanding about what's been going on in the church over the past few decades. And he continues on, Tim Sullivan, writing for the Associated Press, quote, "Across the United States, the Catholic Church is undergoing an immense shift. Generations of Catholics who embraced the modernizing tide sparked in the 1960s by Vatican II are increasingly giving way to religious conservatives who believe that the church has been twisted by change, with the promise of eternal salvation replaced by guitar masses, parish food pantries, and casual indifference to church doctrine," end of quote. Okay, there is a lot there in that paragraph that we have to unpack. All right, he talks about generations of Catholics embracing the quote-unquote modernizing tide sparked in the 1960s by Vatican II. Man, if I had a quarter for every single time I've heard that phrase. Very often people who think that Vatican II was modernizing, and I understand where they're coming from with this, because of course this idea of throwing open the windows of the church, St. John the 23rd, who of course convened Vatican II, talked about that, getting the church kind of open to the modern world in a certain sense, interacting with ideas, but doctrine was never changed. And I challenge anybody to read the actual documents of Vatican II. I remember when Pope Benedict was elected, I remember going to church the next Sunday, and there was a particular guy who was, I don't want to, you know, say that he was a baby boomer, okay? So not all baby boomers are liberal Catholics, okay? And I have a problem with the term liberal Catholics, too. I'm going to get into that in just a second. But anyways, this gentleman, I'll call him Jerry, not his real name. Jerry was livid. I mean, he was so upset. And I actually had to ask him, I said, "Are you okay? Like, what's wrong?" And he said, I just can't believe this whole Benedict thing. I'm like, what's the issue with that? All he's going to do is undo and destroy everything that Vatican II ever stood for. I mean, this guy was getting red in the face. There was almost like literal steam coming out of his ears. And I'm thinking, like, have you ever read Vatican II documents? Like, what is he going to tear down from Vatican II? Actually, to the contrary, what he's really talking about, obviously, was the quote-unquote spirit of Vatican II, which is this nebulous thing that's been used to justify all kinds of departures from authentic Catholic teaching and practice. It's not in the documents, though. It's not in the documents. To the contrary, popes who were actually at Vatican II, think about Pope Paul VI, think about St. John Paul II, think about Benedict XVI, they were all there. They were council fathers. They were involved in Vatican II. And I think they, especially with JP II, there's no question this is the case with John Paul II and his successor Benedict, who of course collaborated so closely with him as Cardinal Ratzinger during the JP II papacy. I remember reading an article by an Australian theologian named Tracy Rowland. And she talked about how really JP II, and this isn't like a secret that she discovered, everybody kind of knows this, JP II in his papacy, he really saw his ministry as trying to make sure that the program, the actual program, the actual intent of Vatican II got implemented in the church, and to make sure that the right teaching of Vatican II was disseminated in the church. And if you read through his encyclicals, that's exactly what he's trying to do. He's amplifying on themes from Vatican II. His predecessor, Paul VI, with Humanae Vitae, again, and that came out in 1968, 3 years after the council ended, again, verifies the traditional teaching of the Catholic Church on aspects of human sexuality and marriage. And same with Benedict XVI. He continued in this vein of Orthodox teaching, really giving proper interpretation of the council. Pope Francis is the first pope that we've had that wasn't actually involved in Vatican II. So I'm not saying that he doesn't support it, and I'm not saying that at all, but I'm just saying that the last few popes that we've had were there, and they actually were insiders to this whole project. And of course, it's pretty well known and pretty much assumed that JP II actually probably wrote Gaudium et Spes 22, that famous chapter 22. So anyways, kind of getting far afield here, but this idea that the promise of it, as Tim Sullivan wrote about in the Associated Press, the promise of eternal salvation replaced by guitar masses Well, maybe the Guitar Masters aren't a great thing. I'll go ahead and say that. It's not my favorite. It's not my cup of tea. It is a musical style. I'm not really into folk masses. Maybe you are. Parish food pantries. This idea that traditional Orthodox Catholics are opposed to parish food pantries? Come on. Listen, serving the poor and taking care of them never goes out of style. But when Tim Sullivan mentions casual indifference to church doctrine, they're not wrong. That has been a problem in the church. And that is a bad idea. Casual indifference to church doctrine. People cannot be indifferent to church doctrine. They've got to know it, which very often they don't. And we've got to live it out. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 888-914-9149. I wonder if you read this piece, what you thought about it, as I'm trying to share some of the ideas in it with you. And it's kind of a good follow-up to what we were talking about yesterday with the phenomenon of parish hopping or parish shopping. I'm trying to find a parish that fits the vision of Catholicism that you want to be a part of, whether it's liturgical reasons, whether it's reasons of doctrine and teaching. You want to go to a parish where the Catholic faith is taught in all its purity and clarity. That's a big reason why people very often want to go to a different parish than maybe the geographical parish that's maybe closer to them. So 888-914-9149. I don't know what you think about this. So this is essentially a kind of a profile of this one parish in Madison, Wisconsin, which was a quote-unquote liberal parish for a long time and then has become quote-unquote now conservative now because an Orthodox priest, and by Orthodox priest, of course, I don't mean the Orthodox churches of the East. I mean a believing right. Orthodoxy is simply right doctrine. That's what it means, orthodoxy. There's also orthopraxis. That means right practice of the faith. And then really undergirding it all is orthocardia. You've got to have a right heart. So orthodoxy, yes, that's important, but we also have to have orthopraxis and an orthocardia, a right heart as well for God and for other people. So again, this is what Tim Sullivan says in the AP, this shift towards what he calls conservatism, what he calls traditionalism. He says, quote, "The shift, molded by plummeting church attendance, increasingly traditional priests, and growing numbers of young Catholics searching for more orthodoxy, has reshaped parishes across the country, leaving them sometimes at odds with Pope Francis and much of the Catholic world," end of quote. I don't know about that last statement. Now, there's no question that when it comes to the Latin Mass, Pope Francis does seem to have a problem with that. I don't think it's a controversial statement. He's not necessarily in favor of that. He rolled back permissions for celebrating the Latin Mass that Benedict had specifically allowed. He rolled it right back. But in terms of doctrine, I don't see it. Pope Francis is constantly upholding doctrines that are not popular in the modern world, especially with respect to the human person, the fact that abortion is evil, gender dysphoria is a problem, it ought not to be celebrated, that sort of thing. So in terms of liturgy, by the way, I don't have a dog in this fight necessarily. I just want liturgy to be well done. I think Latin masses well done are awesome. I think Novus Ordo masses well celebrated and properly celebrated are incredible. Novus Ordo Ad Orientem, I've seen a few of those, participated in some of those. If it's done properly, they're very glorifying to God, of course. And the Mass is legitimate, whether it's Novus Ordo or traditional Latin Mass. And everybody has their preferences for sure. There's no question about it. But anyways, he goes on to say this. This is Tim Sullivan writing for AP, 888-914-9149, if you want to react to this. He says, quote, "The changes are not happening everywhere. There are still plenty of liberal parishes, plenty that see themselves as middle of the road. Despite their growing influence, conservative Catholics remain a minority," end of quote. I gotta just say this. I don't know about you, but I hate. I really dislike using political categories and political language to talk about the church. This idea of, and I know that we do it, and there's a reason why we do it. It's easy for people to understand what we mean by this, I guess. liberal parishes, liberal Catholics, conservative parishes, conservative Catholics, centrist, middle of the road. I mean, come on, these are political categories, and they really have no business in talking about the church and church doctrine and praxis, right? It's either orthodox or it's heretical. That's at the end of the day, it's either in adherence with Catholic doctrine or it's not. End of story. So, and I know that might be too black and white for many of you out there, but it's true. Otherwise, you're creating a church of your own design, if you will. And so the article kind of laments people who are now in their 70s and 80s in terms of age, many of them priests, many of them clergy, and a couple of them were interviewed by Tim Sullivan. And they are expressing a lot of lament and remorse for the way things are going, that younger generations are becoming more orthodox, if you will. And one of them who was interviewed was Father John Forlidi, who's 87 years old, a retired priest in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul. And he says, quote, "They say they're trying to restore what us old guys ruined," end of quote. And it describes this particular 87-year-old priest as a priest who fought for civil rights. Okay, that's awesome, depending on how that's defined, of course. And he also apparently fought for reforms in Catholic school sex education. That might not be so awesome, depending on what that's all about. And I'm guessing it's about liberalizing or attempting to nullify traditional church teaching in that area. Another older priest, a 72-year-old priest named Father Doug Kessel, who's from Blessed Trinity Parish in Cleveland, he was more blunt when he was speaking to Tim Sullivan. He said, quote, they are, and the they, I guess, are conservative Catholics, they're just waiting for us to die, end of quote. All right, so this is seen as a great tragedy in this article that these liberalizing tendencies, these unorthodox tendencies and teachings are falling by the wayside. The last gasp of the 1960s generation, many of whom are passing away now, their great project of trying to change church teaching and practice seems to be failing because younger generations just are not buying it, and they're actually looking for orthodoxy. What do you think about this? 888-914-9149, and give me a call. We'll be right back after this break on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Stay tuned.
And fun. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back on this Friday. We're talking about a viral article from the Associated Press lamenting how liberal Catholicism, quote unquote, seems to be going the way of the dinosaur and conservatives are rising up. Oh, the horror of it. This writer is very apoplectic about it. I can't even talk. I'm just so flabbergasted by this thing. And I wonder what you think about it. 888-914-9149. And if you're on the way to Wisconsin, maybe you're sitting in an airport, as producer Jim says, you're sitting in an airport, you're waiting for your flight to the Walk to Mary that's happening tomorrow, May the 4th. It's the 11th. May the 4th be with you on the 11th annual Walk to Mary, the 21-mile trek from Green Bay to the National Shrine of Our Lady of Champion, which is the only approved Marian apparition in the United States. Now, you don't have to do the whole 21-mile trek. There are certain waypoints along the journey that you can pick up your walk on, depending on how much you want to do, how much you're able to do. And the walk's organizers, Pat Dupre, Tom Schmidt, really hats off to those guys. They are anticipating over 6,000 attendees this year. That's going to be the biggest of all time. And you can send your prayer intentions. It's not too late to get them into Father Rocky's backpack. He's going to print them off, take them with him. And as someone said at a meeting today at Relevant Radio, if he's going to carry all these prayer intentions, who's going to carry Father Rocky? You can send your intentions to relevantradio.com/champion. relevantradio.com/champion. And if you can't make it there in person, you can at least join the walk in spirit and bring some extra socks. So again, it's tomorrow, May the 4th, starting in Green Bay, Wisconsin, and over 6,000 pilgrims. That's unbelievable. Wow, that is so exciting. 888-914-9149. Let's go to the phones right now. Let's go to Charlie in Philadelphia. Hello, Charlie.
Hey, how you doing? I can't get in my head what reason Francis for attacking these contemplative monastic orders, like these Carmelite nuns in California and some in Arizona and here and there, and there's even a Carmelite monastery near me here in Philadelphia. And it just seems like he doesn't want these people to sacrifice their lives and give everything they have to God in prayer and contemplation and fasting. And you know what I mean? I don't understand why these things bother him, other than you read like the letter of St. James, where he says that the prayers of a righteous man have much power. Now, if you think about that, and he mentions Elijah in his letter, but if you imagine the power of having 20, 30, 40, 50 men or women together and with one intent for peace or health or whatever it is, all praying to the same goal, it must have a lot of kick to it.
You know, James is absolutely right. The prayer of a righteous person is powerful and effective. Thank you so much, Charlie. And I'm not familiar with the comments that you're referencing. I don't know what you're talking about there. I apologize, but certainly, as far as I've ever heard, you know, the popes have always supported those with religious vocations. And what's really cool about this too, in the context of this article from the Associated Press lamenting the rise of Orthodox Catholics, which I think is a good thing, we've seen a lot of beautiful religious orders spring up during this new springtime evangelization. Thinking about the Sisters of Life in New York City, and just the beautiful pro-life work that they do. And a lot of, there's actually really interesting, I think she's one of the speakers actually this year at the National Eucharistic Congress. And of course, we at Relevant Radio will be there as well. Hope to see you there. Sister Miriam James, I think she's going to be a keynote speaker there. She wears a full habit. She talks about the fact that in college, she was kind of a party animal, and God completely changed her life, and she's obviously now a nun, and that's super inspirational to young women who are considering possibly a vocation to the religious life. So, yes, the most of us are called to live our lives in the middle of the world and sanctify the world from being in the world, but others are called to sort of, quote-unquote, leave the world, per se, and pray for the world, and that's their vocation, and both are necessary. Both are needed. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show, 888-914-9149. Let's go to John in Virginia Beach. Hello, John.
Hi, Cale. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How about you, John?
Doing well. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, ding, ding, ding. We got to ring the bell for it. We got to get a cowbell or something for this, Jim.
There you go.
Appreciate it, John.
I just wanted to say I'm a director of religious ed at a parish. Okay. In the area, and a friend of mine actually forwarded me that article, and we just kind of started laughing a little bit about it because of the caricature of young Catholics, and just to kind of let you know and whatnot, I'm sure you've seen it as well too, but I think that young people are searching for something authentic, whether Latin Mass or Reverent Novus Ordo. I'm like you. I'm a revert from evangelical Christianity.
Wow.
So when I came back to the Catholic Church, it was like I wanted the fullness of Catholicism. And so being in ministry in my parish and in the diocese, we've seen where a lot of the parishes that would have never had adoration before, like 20 years ago, I think most of the parishes in the diocese, both the quote, less traditional and the more traditional, all have adoration at least once a week now. At our parish now, and we have a reverent, Novus Ordo Mass, but no one complains about anything. So you have women that veil, you have people that kneel to receive communion. And we have a lot of converts. So we brought in about 40 people at Easter Vigil. I have 100 kids making their first communion this weekend coming up.
Wow. That's
amazing. I think the reality is just kind of sad to kind of put that kind of position to think that, you know, instead of looking at what is drawing people, it's just kind of critiquing everything they don't agree with.
Yeah.
And and I think kind of too, from my perspective, and then I'll shut up here, is I think for a lot of young people that have left the church and they just aren't interested in the church, they were kind of fed the half-hearted catechism.
Yeah.
And for those that really learned about the truths of the faith, about having devotion to Blessed Mother, having reverence for the Eucharist, but also being dynamically Orthodox, as like Father Scanlon used to say at Steubenville, I think that's the difference. Like, we're not called to be just all one way, but we're supposed to have the truths of the faith, but be dynamic about it and love it. So those are my comments.
John, I'm so glad you called. God bless you. Thanks for calling in. Hey, don't be a stranger. Call again. I'm so excited about what the Lord is doing through your parish, through your ministry. All these kids are going to come for their first communion this weekend. God bless you and what you're doing. That is awesome, awesome stuff, John. Thanks again. Call anytime, please. Please, that was John. You got it. John in Virginia Beach. Great phone call. Yeah, and this article, it's attempting to kind of slam Orthodox Catholics, especially the younger generations that are coming up. I don't think this article is having the effect that its author maybe hoped it would have, Tim Sullivan. Because this is actually, when he describes the younger generations that are embracing Orthodoxy, it sounds pretty darn attractive to me. I mean, listen to this. He says this, quote, "There are many who welcome this new old church," this new old church. And it's true. They're recovering the resourcement, if you will. They're recovering the traditional doctrine. And I'm going to continue on with this theme. He says, quote, "They often stand out in the pews with the men in ties and the women sometimes with the lace head coverings." Of course, the mantellas. We talked about that on a recent episode as well. "The lace head coverings that all but disappeared from American churches more than 50 years ago. Often at least a couple families will arrive with 4, 5, or even more children, signaling their adherence to the church's ban on contraception, which most American Catholics have long casually ignored," end of quote. And they shouldn't be ignoring this. It's a grave sin. It's a mortal sin. And he's right in that it's not often talked about and it's not often adhered to. But this is what I'm talking about. This is what I mentioned yesterday, Producer Jim, when I was talking about my visit to St. John Cantius in Chicago. And I saw exactly this. All these young families dressed really well with lots of kids. And they were like super happy. They were so excited to be there. And I found it like really attractive. Like, I'm like, how can people not want to get in on this? And I want to share what you were telling me off air, Jim, in just a second. But one of the people that was interviewed for this piece was from this Maria Goretti parish in Madison, Wisconsin. And he said, quote, "We want this ethereal experience that is different from everything else in our lives. It's radical in some ways," said Ben Rouleau. "It's radical in some ways. We're returning to the roots of the church." That's exactly what the word radical means. As many of you know, it means back to the roots. Think about a radish. You know, it's radical. It's a root vegetable, right? We got to get back to this. And this idea that, hey, we don't want something that's the same as what you can get in the world. We want an experience that's different from everything else in our lives, not just for the sake of being different, but I think people really looking for the transcendentals, truth, goodness, and beauty. They're looking for the truly spiritual. We shouldn't want to have the church looking exactly the same as what you can get in the world. And I mentioned yesterday this youth and young adult group that I used to be a part of called the Dead Theologian Society, where all these high school students were really digging incense and Gregorian chant. They couldn't get enough of it because it was not what they were experiencing in everyday life. They didn't want music that sounded like everything that they were listening to on their headphones. My dad is not a devotee of liturgy. It's just not his area of expertise. My parents were traveling a couple years ago, and on a Sunday, they're in this particular town, and they needed to go to Mass on Sunday, and they went to this traditional Latin Mass, and my dad loved it. He called me up as soon as it was over, and he started talking to me about, man, this Mass was incredible, and he couldn't even explain why. He just would not stop talking about this for about 2 weeks, and I think it's because he hit on the fact that this took him somewhere else. This was truly a spiritual experience that was not the same as what you can get sort of out there in the world. Look, if you want the church to be like the world, we've already seen this. Liberal, progressive, mainline Protestant denominations, they've been doing this for decades, and it's not working. If you go to their congregations, they're totally empty on Sundays. They're totally aged or totally empty. And it doesn't work. And people are just not interested. They're looking for faithful, believing, Orthodox Catholic experiences, I think. I don't know what you think. Anyways, Producer Jim, I want you to share with us what you were telling me during the little break last time.
Yeah, I just, we were talking about the article, and, you mentioned in the previous segment about the, I think it was the priest who said, we're just, the young Catholics who are more Orthodox are waiting for us to die off. Well, in a sense, we are not for certain wanting that to happen. We're waiting for maybe these more progressive ideas to die off, because I am kind of that camp, the school where, when I go to church, I do want to be away from the world. I want to be taken out of this world. Of course, the Mass is heaven on earth. And I think of beautiful places like the Cathedral of St. Francis Xavier in Green Bay, where the sanctuary is very elevated. And so we look up when we worship. We're not looking around at everyone else. We're looking up. We're praying with everyone in one accord, worshiping the God that we love so much. And so I just think it's, we've gotten into this, let's think about the horizontal instead of the vertical, looking up. And really, it can be both. It can be both and that's what makes the cross.
Yeah, absolutely. It can be both and. And I always say that a little quick definition of the kingdom of God, and this was Jesus' main message, of course, during his ministry, the kingdom of God, the kingdom of God. What is the kingdom of God? It's the kingdom of right relationships. Having a right relationship with God on the vertical plane, if you will. I know that God isn't, quote unquote, up there, as it were, but right relationship with God, that's the vertical beam. A right relationship with one another, that's the horizontal beam of the cross. And we need both, as you said, Jim. And I resent the implication that only unorthodox or liberal Catholics are the ones that really love people and want to serve the poor. That's not true, because conservative Catholics, Orthodox Catholics should want to do that as well. And it's so hard not to quote Dr. Peter Kraft, because he's so quotable. Another thing he said about people like John Paul II, like Mother Teresa, like the world can't really figure these people out because they have conservative heads, quote unquote, and liberal hearts. They do have that bleeding liberal heart. They love people and they want to serve people. Look at what Mother Teresa was doing. But yet, doctrinally, she's absolutely on line with the church. Same with JP2. And when we have the saints manifesting like that, people can't figure it out. And speaking of JP2, this is where Tim Sullivan, and I think he's probably right about this. I don't know what you would think about this if you're listening to the show, 888-914-9149. He sort of like dates the start of this revolution among younger Catholics, about a revival of Orthodoxy, if you will. He traces it back to World Youth Day in 1993 in Denver, Colorado. And maybe you were there, Jim. I don't know. My wife, Trish, was there. And obviously at Mile High Stadium, where the Broncos played, that's where JP2, his helicopter, lands there. And I wasn't there, but according to reports, the ground was shaking. People were so excited. They were stomping in the stands. And a lot of secular media just couldn't figure it out, why these young people were hanging on every word that this guy was saying. He's obviously very elderly at this point. He's obviously very broken down physically at this point. He's obviously the great communicator, having trouble speaking. And these kids were, you've seen pictures from World Youth Day, where they're just weeping when they get to come up and give them a hug and talk to them for a few moments. What explains that? It can't be explained by social science. I think people are longing for what he represents, God, the love of God, Jesus Christ. And people are also longing for fatherhood, I think, especially in this culture where fatherhood is maligned. Fatherhood is, very often people grow up without a father. There's a book called Fatherless America that talks about this terrible trend in our culture. So when they saw him, they saw maybe the father that they wish they had, and representing, of course, the Heavenly Father. Anyways, I think he may be right about this, that it kind of goes back to World Youth Day 1993 in Denver, this incredible wave. And that's part of the genius, of course, of JP2 starting these World Youth Days. I think it was a masterstroke by him. And again, but in the article, Tim Sullivan, he can't figure this guy out either. He says, I don't understand. Essentially, he's saying how JP2 could sort of be aligned with quote unquote liberal causes. He spoke against capital punishment, push for the rights of workers, forgiveness, that maybe the famous, maybe one of the most iconic, if not the most iconic photographs of the 20th century, John Paul II visiting his would-be assassin Aliaga in prison in Rome and forgiving him. What a powerful image that is. If you've seen that black and white photograph, it's unmistakable. It's unforgettable. But he's uncompromising on dogma. Again, this liberal heart, conservative head, uncompromising on dogma, crackdown on dissident theologians, right? This is JP2, and this is really the kind of what we all should be ascribing to be like and striving to be like. We'll be right back on the Cale Clark Show with your phone calls, 888-914-9149. Be right back.
Faith, facts, and fun. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the program. 888-914-9149. Trying to help you see things in a new light. We were kind of dissecting this viral piece from the Associated Press. Tim Sullivan writing, lamenting how the Catholic Church seems to be experiencing a changing of the guard. The younger generations, the younger priests especially, Orthodox, faithful, believe in the church's teachings, traditional in their outlook on, which is really in lockstep with the teaching of the church on family life, on the faith. I think this is a good thing. He thinks it's a bad thing. And we're hearing from you as well. 888-914-9149. So we'll get back to your calls in just a second. But because it is Friday, producer Jim, producer Miranda have been hard at work on the week that was. In case you missed any of our episodes, here's a little snapshot of the week on the Cale Clark Show. Check it out. Today is the feast day of St. Catherine of Siena. She's the one who went to the Pope and boldly said, you gotta get yourself back to Rome. A lot of people think that she was, in fact, a nun. She wasn't. She was a Third Order Dominican. She was a layperson, but she's one of the doctors of the church. It's incredible how she became a doctor of the church, because she was actually illiterate when she was a kid, had to really learn how to read and write later on in life, and then becomes, through her sublime teaching, a doctor of the church. Unbelievable stuff. Comedian Russell Brand, who has certainly been a very controversial figure over the past few years. And he had talked about this before. He had posted a video a couple days before this about what his weekend plans were. He was planning on getting baptized in the River Thames in London. Well, he did do it. He took the plunge. He mentioned that, you know, none of his problems have really gone away in the sense that he's still living in the middle of the world, but it has given him new resources to deal with stuff that we all have to deal with. And I think that's well said. A lot of people might think that if they do become Catholic, this is going to be some sort of a magic panacea to all your problems. It's not. We still have to live in the world. We still have to live with sinners.
I always look at that word confirmation. Right in the middle of that word is another word, firm. It's firming up your faith and really setting you on the loose for your specific mission in life that the Lord has given you in his vineyard. And as you're looking to the future, what do you think the next right thing is for you to do? What do you think God's calling you to do now that you're in the church?
I started a podcast, and that was when I started praying the rosary. So that's come since I had changed my focus largely. So now what I'm doing is I'm recording a proverb and I'm asking the meanings of the proverbs and writing all of that down, and then putting in some key phrases and then speaking about what I think it means. And that's been an interesting project.
I don't know if you remember the old Mike Myers Saturday Night Live skit of the Scottish store that sold all things Scottish. And his famous line was,
if it's no Scottish, it's crap.
Well, we've got a lot of crap coming from this particular Scot. I pray for him, of course, but I'm talking about Brian Cox. But he said this, that religion has sold humans a false story about reality and contributed to their own quote-unquote stupidity. Brian Cox, he's an atheist, he's a socialist, and I don't know if he'd go so far on the socialism scale to be a communist, but that hasn't exactly been good for the human person. Let's look at what's happened over the last couple hundred years. Stalin, Mao, Pol Pot, hundreds of millions slain. I can't see this being a good system for humanity. He goes on to do some Bible bashing here. He says the Bible is, quote, one of the worst books ever. Anytime somebody says something like that, that to me is an unserious person who hasn't really looked at the evidence. I kind of question whether or not he spent too much time reading the Bible. The producer of record, Jim Shaper, he sent me an amazing article about Pope Francis. Did he encourage parish shopping? Do you guys do this? Jody in Las Vegas. Welcome back, Jody. I haven't heard from you in a long time.
Hi, Cal. Still a faithful listener. Love
awesome.
Your show. I enjoy it more of the traditional mass myself. There are people in my life that have been falling away, Catholics. There's a church in downtown. It's a little bit farther. It's the Gregorian chant. It's a beautiful mass, and it's something that is appealing to them. And this is helping people that have been falling away, like, get back to confession, get back to the Eucharist. And I've seen amazing differences with that.
This is what I would do, and this is just my personal opinion. There's no way I'm going to sit under the leadership of an unorthodox place that's just, you know, not in a good place theologically. I'm going to go to a different place, even if it's outside of my geographical boundary. The good restaurants, they're packed for a reason. And in the same way, a lot of the quote-unquote good parishes, they're really full for a reason. There you go. They're full for a reason, and they're full of orthodox younger Catholics, it seems like. And I think that's a good thing. We've been talking about an article by the Associated Press by Tim Sullivan, sort of lamenting this return of orthodoxy in the Catholic Church. But thanks very much, producer Jim and Miranda as well, for working on the week that was. Great snapshot of our week. I especially like, Jim, how you added in the actual Mike Myers soundbite there. Appreciate that. Appreciate that, my fellow Torontonian. And I'll tell you what, speaking of Toronto, we have to add this in, Jim. We should have tacked this on to the week that was, but do you happen to have... Do you just happen to have, just for me, do you have the goal last night, the winning goal from William Nylander of the Toronto Maple Leafs, our Toronto Maple Leafs, the official hockey club of the Cale Clark Show, against the Boston Bruins in Game 6? Let's check it out.
Just for you, Cale, here you go.
Long shot off a leg goes wide. Morgan Rielly trying to chip it ahead. He does. Cleared by Nylander. Up ahead for Nyes. To Nylander. Breakaway. Game on his stick. Scores! Willie Nylander makes it 2-0. We're going to Boston again, buddy. This time we're going to finish the job.
Well, I certainly hope Joe Bowen is right, radio play-by-play guy for the Leafs. He's so iconic, absolutely. Anyways, he got that great call on the William Nylander winning goal last night in Game 6. The Bruins were up 3-1. The Bruins very famously blew a 3-1 lead last year to the Florida Panthers. Florida went on to the finals. They lost to the Vegas Golden Knights. But I don't think any team in any major professional sports league in North America has blown a 3-1 series lead 2 years in a row in the playoffs. I'm not aware of it if it's happened. But it could happen. It could happen. The Leafs, they were left for dead just a few days ago. They're back in it. We're going to Game 7 in Boston tomorrow night. So that will be exciting. That will not be boring. But I'll tell you what, boredom is sometimes not a bad thing for us in life. And this is something that we've kind of lost, I think, unfortunately, with the advent of our smart devices, with constant stimulation, constant entertainment. I don't think it's necessarily a good thing. And I've been reading quite a few pieces on this. So hopefully this weekend, you can be bored just a little bit because it's actually good for us. I want to just give you a couple quotes from a piece that I was reading. And it's from a new online magazine called Cafe America Magazine. I think it's called Cafe America. Cafe Americaine. Americaine. It's kind of a French twist to it. And it's written by a guy named George Hoare, H-O-A-R-E, on boredom. That's the name of the article, on boredom. He says a better society would treasure boredom. I just want to quote this a little bit because I think he's bang on here and he just explains it so well. He says, quote, while the ideal of the industrial economy was the sale of commodities for a higher price than their production, the managers of the attention economy must abide by a different principle. Don't let the consumer be bored. And we've heard so often that we're in an attention economy, and it's sort of a fight for mind share and a fight for attention in the digital world especially. He goes on to say this, quote, although the cultural industries have always looked to entertain and to make money doing so, the demands on our attention have never been more varied and insistent. Culture is the aspect of modern societies in which the social acceleration central to many spheres of life is most visible and directly felt. The central design feature of modern apps that populate our smartphones is to provide an addictive experience that grabs the user's attention and keeps them coming back for more. All aspects of engagement and user experience ultimately boil down to this requirement. Now, this is where it gets really interesting. He says, quote, "It is hardly surprising in this context that prescriptions to treat attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, otherwise known as ADHD, they are soaring. Prescriptions to treat ADHD are soaring all over the world. The previous association of ADHD with children is being weakened." That's kind of interesting that he says that, because he's essentially saying there are adults who have ADHD now, and quite a few of them, not just kids, and a lot of it has to do with these distraction devices that we have in our lives. He says, quote, "With the overstimulation built into our experience of all cultural forms, the challenging of focusing attention on a single object is a difficult one. It's a significant one. And those struggling with attention management require The fault can be said to lie with individuals, not in any... Okay, so what's he basically saying here? We've got this boredom of overstimulation. There's so much going on. And this whole thing is, don't let people get bored. Make sure they're always paying attention to... And this is the addictive nature, especially of social media, the hyper-scrolling, the doom-scrolling. There's so much going on. You're never bored, but you are bored because you're overstimulated. You used to be bored because you had nothing to look at. Now you've got too much to look at, and you can't focus on any one thing. And pharmaceuticals are being prescribed to sort of deal with this. So this is a problem. But I think boredom is actually a good thing. And a few years ago, Cal Newport, I'm a big fan of his work, and he wrote this back in 2009, and I'm sure he said much more about this since. He says, "Have we lost our tolerance for a little boredom?" Now, he wrote this back in February of 2009, a famous author, Cal Newport, and he talked about this guy who was writing, a food columnist, wrote an article in the New York Times, and he talked about how he was talking about American obesity, and he said, "We've lost our tolerance for a little hunger." Anytime you get just a little bit hungry, the slightest tweak, the slightest pang in your stomach, you want to grab something right away. It's often processed stuff, processed calories, not good for you. It's okay, he says, to be a little bit hungry between meals during the day. And he started thinking, you know, it's true not just when it comes to physical hunger. Americans have lost their tolerance for a little bit of boredom. Because as soon as you're just a touch bored, you want to reach for that phone, you want to reach for anything. The remote control, so that you can distract yourself. But here's the thing. When you actually let yourself be bored for a little bit, you can actually come up with some pretty good ideas. Just like with kids, if they're left alone for a little while, and Miranda came up with a great graphic for today's show on social media, the Cat in the Hat. But the section where these two kids are super, super bored, what are we going to do? And the Cat in the Hat sort of gives them this little game to play. Kids kind of will invent things, and sometimes they never would have invented these things if they had not been bored, these great games that they play. And sometimes we have thoughts that we'll never have, solutions to problems that we've got that we would never have figured out unless we allowed ourselves to be bored, because that's kind of where the creativity happens. That's where the creativity happens. Cal Newport said that exceptional things, ideas, writing, mathematics, art, whatever it may be, they all require hard work. Anything that's a great achievement or is going to require hard work. Michelangelo's Pieta, that was hard work. I'm sure he loved doing it, but he was anything that's tough requires boring stretches, and your mind is going to be pleading with you to seek something else. Take a smoke break, take a mental smoke break, grab your phone. Maybe there's an email waiting for me. Maybe I should check the news. But he says, if our generation loses its tolerance for boredom, we're going to lose our ability to produce things of exceptional quality. And that happens when you have to push through tough stretches in your work. You have to be able to do that. You have to be able to focus. And our society has kind of lost that. And I always say this to Michaela, even though she's only 8 years old, I'm like, focus is a superpower in today's world. If you can do that, that's going to be something that could set you apart. And for you and me as well, we've got to be able to stick with the task. And sometimes just let our minds wander at times. And sometimes we'll come up with creative ideas for our problems. And in that silence, sometimes even God speaks to us in a different way. Whew. All right. We've gotten through another week. We only have a few seconds left. I want to thank you guys for calling in, for listening all week long. We will be back next week. If you missed anything, grab the podcasts on the Relevant Radio app. Faith Explained, Cale Clark Show, and all of our fine programs. Speaking of which, Tim Reese coming up next, followed by Father and the Family Rosary Across America. Jim Schaefer produced. Miranda took your phone calls. Go Leafs, go. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.